Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Pav.
And I'm Neil.
And welcome to the Top 10 of Anything podcast.
Let's start the countdown!
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So you have a bunch of chords, some words written on a page, some instruments, and maybe even some melodies. And any mere mortal would have no idea what to do next. But there are some that can turn shapes and sounds into timeless, beautiful, uplifting, life-changing moments in time. The songwriter can fill and break your heart with one hook and one lyric. Here's Neil with 10 songwriter facts.
Thank you very much, Pav. So here we go. So, Paul McCartney is the most successful songwriter of all time. His song Yesterday was the most covered, or is the most covered song. Max Martin has written 25 Billboard Top 100 number ones for the likes of Backstreet Boys, Kelly Clarkson, Britney Spears and Taylor Swift, to name but a few, but claims he can't sing. Angel. The biggest selling star who didn't write his own songs was Elvis Presley. And another super selling star who didn't write his own songs is none other than Frank Sinatra. Rod Temperton. Not a name you might know, but you'll know his songs. He famously wrote Thriller. But he also wrote more, including for Chaka Khan, George Benson, and Quincy Jones, just to name a few. The longest song ever written is Earthenius Symphony of the Crown at a whopping 48 hours, 39 minutes and 35 seconds. And according to the Guinness Book of World Records, Napalm Death's 1989 song, You Suffer, is the world's shortest song written at just 1.3 seconds long. And the oldest song to be known to have been written is the Hararian Hymn No. 6, which is believed to be at least 35,000 years old. And the average song length written is 3 minutes and 42 seconds long.
That's it, isn't it, Neil?
That is it.
Well, we are here this week to try and work out who the number one songwriter of all time is. And joining us, ladies and gentlemen, is one of our Patreon pals, all the way from the US of A. It's the lovely Crystal. Welcome back, Crystal.
Hey there.
It's so good to have you back. Right, the question I wanted to ask about songwriters. Now, when I was trying to work out my top 10, which was very, very hard.
Very hard.
I'm going to ask both of you, obviously, but starting with you, Crystal, how have you worked out your top 10 songwriters? Now, is it songwriters that you feel have had the most impact, or in regards to the songs that you love yourself? So, Crystal, which way have you gone?
For me, I really went impact to me. I have always been very moved by lyrics. And so at different points in my life, different songs, different songwriters have really impacted me. So that's really, really where I drew from, as opposed to what other people might feel are the best.
Right. Okay. Neil, what about you?
Very, very similar. It's all people or songwriters that are personal to myself and mean a lot to me through the songs they've written and the career they've had or had. So that's how I did it.
Because the other thing you got to look at when it comes to, I was just in music in general. Mm. And I'm sure that my parents said the same thing in the 80s when I was listening to Frankie Goes to Hollywood and Spandau Ballet and all of those kind of bands that, like, oh God, you know, this is just throwaway music. No one's going to be singing this in 30, 40 years' time. And when I listen to things like even the big stars of today, like, say, Ed Sheeran and Harry Styles, I think, are people really going to be singing those songs in like 40 years' time when you think of people still love the Rolling Stones and still love the Beatles? I don't know. Crystal, do you agree with that? Or is that the sort of thing you think about?
You know, I think it really, as people get older, they drift back to what was important to them when they were younger. So, yeah, I think in 30 years, you're going to have a generation who looks back on today's music and remembers it fondly and keeps it alive. Not necessarily all of it, but I think there's definitely going to be those artists, those songs that continue.
Yeah.
Mm, completely agree. I think it's all generational, isn't it? I think the generation that are listening to the likes of Ed Sheeran, I won't say too much about him. I'll probably get in more trouble.
No,
it's not the thoughts. I just suddenly thought I might get into trouble. But the likes of that, I think they will last because it's of their time, isn't it? And music is relevant to what you were doing at that time. So the 80s were very precious to ourselves, Pav, and things like that, and that's why we hark back to them, and likewise for the older generations back to the 60s. It's all part of growing up, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, but I mean, people like, say, Mick Jagger and Keith Richards, or Lennon and McCartney, they were there at the start. So the stuff that they were doing is the stuff that, you know, without Lennon and McCartney, I don't think there would have been Oasis.
Would they?
Yeah. So it's that those kind of songwriting styles. But because they were the first ones, they're held more in high regard.
Don't forget what John Lennon said. If there wasn't Elvis Presley, there wouldn't have been the Beatles.
Exactly.
He famously said that. So,
but obviously Elvis didn't write his own stuff. It was,
no, but he was
all these amazing songwriters.
Yeah, but obviously a lot of his songs and his music was inspired by, like, the you know, the gospel and that sort of music, wasn't it, when it came through. So
I think that's all it is
inspiration, and it's nice that songwriters continue to inspire young people to keep them going.
Yeah. Well, I'm fascinated to know what you both have in your top 10. So, Crystal, kick us off with your number 10.
Okay. So for my number 10, it's the woman, the myth, the legend, Miss Dolly Parton.
Oh,
okay.
What a legend.
Now, I will say that I had about 30 different ones on my my, like, pre-list, if you like, and Dolly Parton was definitely one of them.
Yeah, she's just, I mean, she can tell a story song, and I mean, she wrote "I Will Always Love You." I mean, everybody, you know, knows the Whitney Houston version, but she's the OG. She wrote it, she sang it. You know, and then she's got, you know, the fun songs like 9 to 5, which really says something. If you listen to lyrics, it's really talking about what women go through in the workplace, even now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
And then and Jolene. I mean, even if the only song she ever wrote was Jolene, it's just an amazing song.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, I completely agree with you with Dolly Parton. I mean, she's not in my top 10, but she was up there in the sort of high teens.
She's written timeless classics. That's what she's done, hasn't she? Mm-hmm.
You know,
I think that's a hard thing to do. I mean, it's easy to write, but it's easier to write songs of the time rather than something that's going to stand the test of time.
Well, that's a mark, I think, of a good songwriter, is somebody that those songs will transcend the decades. Yeah. It doesn't matter what decade that song comes out. It will be a classic. And the one thing I would say for my top 10, and I've written songs in my time, right? So there are times when you can very simplify sing songwriting, which I think is what I can do. I only know like four chords on a guitar. And if you know four chords, you can basically play the entire songbook of Oasis, because that's basically what it is. And you can write, and I think as much as I love Noel Gallagher, and again, he's not in my top 10, his songs can be very simple. And, you know, you could easily write. So that's why he's not in my top 10. I've picked people that I listen to their songs and think, how did you write that?
Mm.
How did you come with just the melodies or the arrangements? But Dolly Parton is one of those ones that you wouldn't know. I wouldn't know half the songs that she's written.
Mm.
But and it blew my socks off when I found out that she'd written I Will Always Love You, because it was a Whitney Houston song.
Mm-hmm.
And then, because I think, wasn't it in Best Little Whorehouse in Texas? Wasn't that the movie she wrote?
It was. And the story behind it is she was partnered with Porter Wagoner in the 60s, and they had a falling out. And on his deathbed, she actually wrote that song for him, you know, to say, you know, no matter what we've been through, I will always love you.
Wow.
Well,
that's good. I'm glad that there was like that, because if she'd have sat on his deathbed and wrote, he's going to die, it would have been really nasty, wouldn't it? Yeah. Don't think it's been quite a bigger hit, I don't think, for Whitney Houston a few years later. That's a good story. Okay, then your number 10.
It's Benny and Bjorn.
Oh, that's my number 5.
Is it?
Yes.
There we are. So, well, we talk about timeless classics and foot-tapping songs. They're the masters of it. For people that don't know, Benny and Bjorn were from ABBA.
Yeah.
In case people don't know.
Are you going to try and say their last name?
No. Could you?
Benny Andersson and Bjorn Ulvaeus. I think that's how you're supposed to say it.
It's very
Scandinavian, isn't it?
Very nice.
Hello, family.
But their songs have held the test of time, and it's testament now with the theatre in London that they've got, and the stage show that they have. What is it? Holograms of themselves, but
yeah,
and through to the musical, the Mamma Mia musical movies. I mean, it's just I've never met anybody that doesn't like at least one ABBA song. There we are. That's how bold a statement I'll make.
Crystal's going to blow you over now. She's going to say, I hate them. Oh, no.
I love ABBA. I can't help but smile when I think of them. Because, yeah. You know, it's, you know, you go, you know, with Dancing Queen. It's, how can you not, like, bop around and smile with that?
Yeah.
Exactly. And they'll have these boppy like tunes, but the lyrics have got a little bit darker meaning in some of them, haven't they? If you listen to them.
Yeah.
So
they are one of those songwriters that one song, like you say, you can be bopping to at a wedding or something like that. And then the next minute, they are like heartbreaking tunes with beautiful melodies. Yeah, that's why they're my number 5. I mean, you can, again, I've spoken so much on these music podcasts that we do about ABBA. They're indestructible songs, but it's one hell of a skill to keep writing such great pop. Their greatest hits. I don't know if we'd ever do a top 10 greatest hits albums, but that would have to be up there, because I don't think
it'd be in the top 10 for sure.
They don't have to be. There isn't a bad song. You could pick 20 of their songs that would go.
They do two volumes as well, haven't they?
I think they did. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they did.
Yeah.
Crazy. Right. My number 10 is probably going to be controversial. And he wasn't in my top 10 originally, and I thought I have to put him in, and it's John Lennon. He's probably going to be higher in a lot of people's, or maybe even number 1, I don't know. But in regards to the Beatles, his songs are not my favourite Beatles songs, but you can't deny just what he brought to music. Him and McCartney together, but I mean they didn't write all of their early stuff. They basically wrote together, didn't they? And then they shared the songwriting credit, even though, as you see from the Get Back documentary, they helped each other with all their songs. Not a massive fan of his solo stuff. I mean, there's there's some great songs, but I think there's also a lot of, once Yoko Ono got involved, there was a lot of experimental avant-garde stuff.
What's wrong with all of that?
Well, the yay stuff, I just can't be doing.
But you know, you can't argue with the perfection that is Imagine.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Exactly.
And there's Woman is a great song, and the other ones, which I can't remember now. Give Peace a Chance is a great
Working
song.
Class Hero.
Working Class Hero is a great song. There are great songs that he's done. Mm. And even I sort of thought, is that right to put John Lennon at number 10 in the greatest songwriters of all time?
No, there's no right or wrong answer, is
right. There is no right or wrong.
It's not.
But there's part of me that's sort of thinking, is it cooler? Is it more trendy to put him up higher because he is an icon? And I don't know. But strange that neither of you have said anything. So that either means he's not in your top tens or he's number one. So
that's an early spoiler, if not. Isn't it?
go on then, Crystal, your number 9, please.
My number 9, we'll see if this one's controversial. Martin Gore from Depeche Mode.
Okay.
No.
Again, harkening back to the lyrics, I don't know a girl who was a teenager in the 80s who didn't listen to Somebody on repeat.
Mm.
Blasphemous Rumors, People Are People, Master and Servant, And he said a lot in his songs, but they were really interesting musically as well.
Mm.
And I think, that's, again, it's a function of me being a child of the 80s. I think there aren't a lot of people, I think, that are going to have Martin Gore on their list. But for me, when I start thinking about it, he could not be on mine.
Mm.
No, and what a change! I mean, in their style, really, wasn't it? They went from being this sort of synth pop little outfit to the emo goth loving. It was a huge transition. It was almost shocking if you were around at the time.
But I can make it Personal Jesus, wasn't it? Was the one that they sort of all grunged up a little bit. At,
was it Personal
it?
Jesus?
I think it was.
Yeah,
because. David Gahan grew his hair out, didn't he?
And
his, tattoos everywhere.
He got his own demons, of course.
Yeah. It always seems to me, I don't know, do the Americans like Depeche Mode more than in the Britons? I don't know.
I don't think so.
It always seems to me that anybody we've spoken to say that they love Depeche Mode.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
For me, growing up in Southern California, listening to K-Rock, Depeche Mode was top echelon.
K-Rock that broke Depeche Mode in America, wasn't it?
Yeah, K-Rock and Richard Blade.
Yeah.
And it surprises me that they're not as popular, hearing that they're not as popular in the UK.
Mm. I think they're popular.
They are, because when they tour, when they do their tours, I mean, they sell out so quick, even in this country. Mm. So they're gone. I mean,
obviously they're massive in Europe as well, aren't they?
Yeah, and I've got friends that are absolutely mad on them and will pay any money to see them. So,
yeah, crazy.
Going back, I think it was Personal Jesus before Enjoy the Silence, because I think. I can't remember which way around it is, but it was either one of those songs that they changed their style, wasn't it?
Enjoy the Silence was before, I think.
Because that's quite... That album, I can't remember the name of the album, that had gothy moments all through that, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, it was an interesting transition, though, between the two, wasn't it?
Very much, because I can remember the actress Lysette Anthony was in the video for Personal Jesus.
That's right.
Yeah, sort of like with a low-cut top on. I can't remember why I remember I honestly
still is a beautiful lady.
Yes, indeed. Go on then, Neil, you're number 9.
So it's the wonderful Sam Cooke, the man with the voice that I could just listen to all day. I love his songs. I mean, obviously they don't speak volumes to me because of my circumstance, but they're just moving and beautiful, and it's quite often his greatest hits that I will go to sleep listening to, that puts me at my resting phase. Are you a big fan of Sam Cooke, Crystal?
Oh, I love Sam Cooke. And I'm curious to know, is it more his voice or his writing?
Well, some of the songs, when his little little love songs, and the fact that he wrote them himself at the time back then when a lot of those artists didn't write their own songs like that, they had other people. They are, but they do, you know, they speak volumes. I mean, I think Wonderful World is just a genius bit of songwriting. I think the lyrics are wonderful. That, you know, that when you listen to it, you almost think they sound basic, but they're not. It's really quite a clever little song when it's written. And what was that, in the 50s, late 50s, early 60s?
Mm. Yeah.
So, yeah, just, and it is his voice as well. I think the guy is probably had one of the best voices ever.
Yeah.
Mm. Always reminds me of the movie Witness.
Wow, The Wonderful World.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Harrison Ford trying to sing it.
Mm. But yeah, I love his songs. I, you know, he's big up there, and people are always shocked when I put him in these sort of things. Really? You listen to that? Mm. Yes, I listen to it a lot. And of course, if you ever go to Graceland, well, I don't know whether it's still the same, but when I went to Graceland many years ago, the Sam Cooke album was still on the turntable in the jungle room. It was the last record Elvis listened to before he passed.
Wow.
There you go. That's a little fact for you.
Well done, Neil.
Yeah.
Very good. Why wasn't that in your top 10 facts at the start of the episode?
Well, because
that's 11 facts we've got. We can't say we don't give our listeners value for money. We've got 11 facts today.
It's one that I learned from my own travels.
Well, that's fantastic. Okay. My number 9 was the lead singer and songwriter for ELO, Electric Light Orchestra, and it's Jeff Lynne. I was just watching TV a couple of weeks ago, and they had ELO live at Wembley from a couple of years ago. And I watched it for about half an hour, and it was a little bit like when you listen to Crowded House. You don't realise how many hit songs they actually... And I thought, I'm going to watch it until there's a song I don't like. And I watched it to the end of the concert. It was like, you don't realise how many great songs. Now, I know some people say that a lot of their songs sound the same, and they're very... you know, very samey. And even when Jeff Lynne did, Traveling Wilburys, that had the same kind of sound to it. And he was always like classed as the fifth Beatle because of George Harrison's friendship with him and stuff. But my God, it was banger after banger. Mm. It was like this. These songs are just fantastic. And every single one of them just written by Jeff Lynne. I actually started listening to some of the greatest hits albums on Apple Music as well, and it's just every song written by Jeff Lynne. God knows how much he's worth. I mean, he must be worth an absolute fortune, you know. And it's amazing. He must be getting into his 70s now.
He's probably in his 70s.
Still got wonderful brown hair. I don't know how he does it.
Is it natural?
I wouldn't have thought so.
You've broken my illusion.
He's not got like a spot of grey in his beard or nothing. Beautifully curled hair. And I thought, well, that's what sex, drugs, and rock and roll does for you. All these rockers, and I'll tell you now, I wish I was a rocker, because you look at all these rockers that they've done like sex, drugs, and rock and roll for 50 years, and they've all got amazing heads of hair. Look at Keith Richards. Look at Rod Stewart. Look at Mick Jagger. Look at all these rockers, and they've got amazing
Steven
hair.
Tyler.
Look, you think, how? And it's obviously that, you know, the sex and the drugs and the rock and roll, that lifestyle just keeps their hair perfect. It shows you how much sex, drugs, and rock and roll I have when I've got no hair at all. There you go. I think that just shows you. But yeah, so Jeff Lynne for me, fantastic songwriter.
I've forgotten about him, to be honest. Not in a bad way. I just,
okay.
We actually saw him in a concert in LA a few years ago. It was fantastic.
Really?
Oh,
was that just him or as the Electric Light Orchestra?
It was as ELO, but at this point, he's pretty much ELO.
Yeah.
So, it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I would recommend anybody get a chance to go. And the beautiful thing was, like, they kept showing the crowd, and the crowd were obviously all in there. Late 40s, 50s, and 60s, but they were all just dancing in the aisles. It was like outside of a summer's day at Wembley Stadium, and everybody was just having so much fun, you know. And I love seeing that with a crowd, you know. And the people aren't taking it seriously, they just they don't care how bad they look or how silly they look, they're all just dancing away and singing to each other. It was just fantastic, really, really good. Right, Crystal, your number 8, then, please.
Okay. I'm curious to see your reaction because I don't know if they're well known in the UK. But Stephen Page and Ed Robertson from Bare Naked Ladies.
Oh, I know the band very well, yeah.
Okay. I love their wordplay. I've been a huge fan for longer than I care to remember. I went on, you know, 4 B&L cruises. I mean, hardcore into the band. And if you just put everything aside and look at the Big Bang Theory theme.
That's them, is it?
Yeah.
Right.
What they shoehorn in there and the facts and you know, how rapidly it goes by. It's like, how do you work Australopithecus into a song naturally? You know, if I had $1 million, it's a fun song. It's like, if I had $1 million, you know, I'd buy you a car. You know,
I didn't realize that's who it was that did.
No, nor me.
Did that song.
Yeah. Yeah. And they have a song harking back a little bit and called Be My Yoko Ono.
Oh, right. Okay.
And it's talking about, I love you like John Lennon loved Yoko Ono that much. And if you break up my band, it's okay.
I'll put that on the video playlist. I'll put that song on the video playlist because that's quite apt.
It is. They're great with their lyrics. And they, again, there's another one that they can do really dark lyrics in a really peppy melody. And you don't really realize that you're hearing a song about, you know, falling off the ledge, washing windows. Yeah, but it's their wordplay is fantastic.
Okay. So what are the guys' names again?
Stephen Page and Ed Robertson.
Right.
And okay. Stephen Page actually left the band in 2009 and started a solo career.
Oh, right.
And his solo stuff is also very good.
Right. Okay.
Okay. That's something to add to the list, Neil, I think, of our homework. Okay, then. Right, Neil, you're number 8, then, please.
It's none other than Peter Gabriel for me.
I thought you'd have him in there somewhere.
Yeah. I've been a huge fan. Well, obviously, was introduced to him with the solo stuff that I knew first, because my mum and dad had, I think it's number 4, which would have had solo. Number 4? Yeah. Peter Gabriel 4, and just got into him, then went back and discovered his early Genesis stuff. Now, that's not for everyone. Mm. That's very proggy and very out there, but... His solo stuff.
Very Neil. That's very Neil.
Very Neil, yeah. his solo stuff is just, it's sublime. You know, he's not prolific. He takes 10, 15 years to write an album. And it shows, I think. You know, he's never happy until he's ready to release it. So however long that'll take. And I just got to hope I can get to see him next year in concert, because he's just announced another tour.
Well, start saving up now, Neil. You might be able to just get some back row seats if you...
Well, I looked at the front rows and they were £186. Well, not front rows, but the blocks at the front. Yeah. £186.
Is that all?
Yeah.
That's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
Well, it is when they're... When you're
I would snap
money.
Them up, Neil. If you can get them at that price, I would
if I
snap
had,
them
if
up.
If I had 100, there might as well be £1 million, because I haven't got £186 at the moment. So,
well, if you had £1 million, you could buy one of Crystal's cars, couldn't you?
Right.
Yeah. But I love his songs, you know, right from his ballads. We all know them, right through to his upbeat ones. And I still think So is probably one of the greatest albums of all time.
Well, he sings my very favorite song of all time, which is In Your Eyes.
Oh, that's a beautiful song. Great.
I mean, that was made very popular by that film Say Anything, wasn't it?
That's
with John
right.
Cusack holding it up. But yeah, it's a beautiful song. And they do tend, I've been lucky enough to see him live anywhere about five or six times. And every show he's finished with that. And it's lovely. He brings all the guest artists out and they all sing it together. It's just superb, and the whole audience sings. I'd highly recommend it. It's a beautiful song.
Downside Up is one of my favorite ones of his.
Okay, that was from Ovo, wasn't it?
Yeah, where he does that live when I think it's him, his daughter,
and they're upside down, and
they're walking upside down on the tour I saw twice.
Yeah.
I'll put that on the video playlist, because that is like really, really clever the way they do it. And that's what he's good. He doesn't just sing his songs, he performs his songs when he does.
He does. And he gives you a stage show as well as a performance, which is absolutely fantastic. If you've seen the video of that show, he comes out in a huge hamster ball. you know, one of those things, and goes around the stage. And when you, I've got the DVD of the making of the tour, and he initially wanted to go out over the crowd and round the crowd on this big thing. And then the insurance people said, we're just going to crush everyone. We wouldn't do that.
Yeah, that's not a good idea.
Yeah, that's quite funny.
Okay, my number eight, if you have John Lennon, I feel you have to have George Harrison. So I've put George Harrison at number eight, mainly for the reason that he wrote, I think, my favourite Beatles songs.
Right.
Which was Something and While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Mm. Those two songs are my two favourite Beatles songs. But when you look at, I mean, my whole idea of George Harrison changed after watching the Get Back documentary. And the fact that I felt that he was always pushing against Lennon and McCartney, wanting his just his little space. And when he didn't get it, he decided to walk away. But when you watch him working out his songs, I Mean Mine was one of them, wasn't it? I think you see him working out and stuff. And then a lot of his solo stuff. My Sweet Lord, obviously, is a great tune. Mm-hmm. Got My Mind Set on You. I love that one when it first came out. And When We Were Fab was another one I think he had from that Cloud Nine album. So I think he's very underrated as a songwriter. But maybe it is a bit controversial to have him above John Lennon, but the reason is, especially While My Guitar Gently Weeps, I think is one of my favourite songs of all time.
Well, there you go. That'll be what he's higher than.
There you go. And especially, like I've said before, I think on this podcast, the live version that was, I think, at a George Harrison tribute concert where Prince does a guitar solo. I don't know if you guys have seen that. One of the greatest guitar solos you will ever see. And it was Jeff Lynne, Tom Petty. George Harrison's son was there, and they're all playing the song, all singing the song. Prince comes wandering on, puts a guitar on, just plays this, and he keeps looking to see, are we going to go again? Like, let's do it again. And he play, and when he finishes, it's one of the greatest rock and roll moments I've ever seen. They finish the songs, they do like the thing where they hang on the cord, and then he picks the guitar up, throws it behind him, and just walks off. So someone else has to come in quick and catch the guitar. And he just walks off. So he doesn't worry if anybody's going to catch the guitar behind him or not. He just throws it up in the air and walks off. So there's no sort of saying hello to other members of the band. He comes in, does what he needs to do. And as Prince normally does, he just pisses off. Off he goes. And he doesn't give a shit because he's Prince. It's fantastic. I'll put that on the video playlist without a shadow of a doubt.
Is that the one when he leans back on the crowd while he plays?
Yes, I think it is.
Because that's phenomenal, isn't it? That he has.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank God he's only a diddy.
But I know. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Anyway, and that's a weird thing. I haven't put Prince in my top 10. How mad is that? How have I not put Prince in my top? Anyway, that was my number eight. So, Crystal, your number seven, please.
Number seven is the mistress of tearjerkers, Sarah McLachlan.
Oh, right.
Angel makes me cry every time I hear it. Yeah. Can't help it. You know, she co-wrote I Will Remember You, which is one of the first songs that I ever heard that made me interested in her.
Right.
But she's got this way of weaving, you know, very emotional imagery into these really haunting melodies. And it just, I've told people, if you hear me listening to Sarah McLachlan more than two songs in a row, please come check on me. Because as much as I love her, she's not an uplifting soul. So yeah, it's a very specific mood that you have to be in, I think, to listen to her for very long.
It's not an artist I've heard a great deal of.
Really?
I must get and have a good old listen.
It's When She Loved Me from Toy Story 2.
Yeah.
It's the one that breaks my heart every single time. Every single time.
Are her albums all as accessible? Each song on the album as accessible as the sort of hits, as I would say?
her earlier stuff, her Fumbling Towards Ecstasy album had probably the most hits. Mm. Hold On and Possession and things like that. And then, you know, later she had Angel and Sweet Surrender was in there somewhere. So she's not like a hit maker.
No,
she's more of like a Brandi Carlile or a Joni Mitchell, where you she's great and you know her, but she's not getting up and playing the hits.
Yeah, it's just sometimes when you deep dive into somebody's album, you get the hits or the known songs, and then the rest of the album sometimes to me feels like fillers.
You're not going to get that with Sarah McLachlan. She wants to rip your guts out. You know, seven to nine consecutive songs.
Right. And it's on my list.
Yeah.
I'm going to have a deep delve into that.
Yes. I think she's, you've only got to go on TikTok and you'll hear a lot of her sad songs when there's ever a sad video that people, Angel is one that, like, it doesn't, if it's about a dog that's being put down or if it's somebody that's got like a terminal illness, that'll be the song that they'll link and play in it. You'll hear it at least 50 times on different really sad videos. Yeah. Okay then, Neil, you're number seven then, please.
Well, likewise, some people find this artist very, very depressing, and some of his songs are. Leonard Cohen.
I thought that would be your number one.
No, not quite.
Okay. Well, yeah. No, it's number seven.
I'm a huge Leonard Cohen fan. His songs mean a lot to me. I grew up listening. It was an accidental discovery. I can't remember whether it was my parents or whether it was my auntie and uncle that had, I can't remember the name of the album. Anyway, when I used to play it on the vinyl and fell in love with his deep voice, and then started to really listen to the lyrics, and then they meant a lot with me. And then when I went through my hard times, which everybody gets them, he was there for me, if that makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So he helped me through a lot of shit. And I explained it on a previous one, you know, If It Be Your Will, why it meant so much. And a lot of his songs did that to me, and it's the lyrics. And I get it why people don't like him and why people find it hard to listen to him, but... yeah, it's just that I've grown up with it and it means a hell of a lot to me. To me, it's a sad loss. We've had a huge sad loss.
Yeah. Mm. It's weird, because like, he is sort of, well, in my mind, he's thought of as someone that does very depressing music and lyrics. And
he's going through
a hard time, and that was what sort of helped you through it.
Well, if you think of the classic, which is actually not one of my favourite of his songs, but Hallelujah, which is covered
beyond death.
If you actually listen to the lyrics, you've got a very sad song, but the lyrics are actually uplifting in a certain ways, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what he does a lot. You know, he's got the uplift and the tragedy of whatever's going on. And I don't know, I just find it more... that I'm relating to it, whether it's because I'm listening to it at the time that I've been through the bad times or whatever has happened... And I still listen to him a lot now, and it makes me feel, well, almost comfort or in a better place. Are you a fan, Crystal, of Leonard Cohen?
I am. I'm not to the extent. Mm. For me, a little Leonard Cohen goes a long way, but I have mad respect for him.
Mm.
What would you say would be the like accessible album or whatever of Leonard
well,
Cohen,
I would yeah. say if you were on any of the streaming services, just put on the playlist because that would be the easiest way. Because with every one of his albums, there's going to be songs that, you know, even they've taken me sometimes a while to actually appreciate them and for them to grow on me. But my favorite album is Various Positions. I think it's just, you know, you've got if Leonard Cohen can do an uplifting song or an upbeat song, he's got that on there, and it's got the very melancholy song and everything like that. But that's the album that's my favorite album at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much. That is a surprise. I must admit that was a surprise. I put Leonard Cohen on the thumbnail specifically for you because I thought, well, I'm going to put him on there because he's going to be Neil's number one. So I'm going to put him on there. So there you go. Okay. Yeah. My number seven, part of a duo, but also a massive solo star, and it's Paul Simon.
He was in. He nearly made my top 10. He really did.
My number four.
He's your number four.
Yeah.
I think the one thing I was saying about like Jagger and Richards and people like that, is there anybody around these days that writes protest songs? Or write songs that sort of really mean something? Because I got a feeling that people like Paul Simon were at the vanguard, you know, were at the forefront of that kind of thing, where a lot of their songs actually sort of meant something, not just meant something within the song, but meant something to like that generation of people. Because there was there's a lot of shit going on all the time, isn't there? You know, there's wars going on all the time. But I don't know. Paul Simon seemed to be one of those people that sort of captured what people felt at that particular time. And talking about somebody that makes songwriting look so difficult, because just watching him play Sound of Silence, how he's finger picking that guitar and making it look so easy, and just the intricacies of his melodies and his harmonies. He's amazing that he's only number seven in my top 10, because as a songwriter, in my mind, there are six people that are better than him. But there's someone that, you know, I mean, even going into the 80s with You Can Call Me Al and Boy in the Bubble and all the Graceland stuff, and what the album was after that. But yeah, just an amazing songwriter. So number four for you, Crystal.
Yeah, April Comes She Will is my favorite. It's not one that a lot of people know. But if you pull it up, it's a gorgeous song, gorgeous song. And then, you know, you've got Cecilia and Bridge Over Troubled Water, The Boxer and Kodachrome.
Kodachrome.
Which is just that sense of, you know, the memories and wanting to keep things and capture things. And I don't know how he conveys what he conveys. Like you said, I don't know how he does that.
No. With the songs that he wrote when it was Simon and Garfunkel, if he'd have just quit, he'd have got in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. But the fact that he then went on and solo and still crazy after all these years, Slip Sliding Away, just songs that are just absolutely fantastic. You know, and he got to sleep with Carrie Fisher as well. I mean, what more do you need? Right. I mean, goodness me. I mean, how much win can there be for a man? I mean, goodness me.
Yeah.
I wonder if he got her to dress up like Princess Leia. I mean, I don't know. He might have done.
Mrs. Robinson.
His own Mrs. Robinson. But yes. So you're number four, my number seven. Not in your top 10, Neil, no? No,
well, that's what I said. It kept going in and out, but I used everybody that, like I said earlier, that meant something to me.
It's
got meaning. And not that they don't, but
okay.
It's been my honourable mentions. I mean, I've got a list as long as you're
I think we're all probably the same with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then. Crystal, you're number six, then, please.
Number six, again, not sure how popular she is in the UK, Stevie Nicks.
Oh, I love Stevie.
Right?
I'd marry her tomorrow.
Oh, my God. The original Gypsy.
Mm.
You know, and Landslide. You know, she wrote that about, you know, difficult relationship with her father. And I related to that because I had the same sort of thing. I'm like, I feel you, Stevie. I feel you. And, you know, Edge of 17, Landslide. I mean, she has just got it. I mean, you know, and add into that, she's got that voice.
Mm, yeah.
But even if you take that out and you just look at her songs, I mean, they're gorgeous and complex.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the one she wrote about Lindsey Buckingham that went on the album, didn't it? Rumours album. Oh, I'm sure it was a Rumours album. Anyway.
Oh, it had to have been, because that's when they did all, that's when they had all of their drama.
Well, and that's Tusk what made the Rumours. Well, wasn't it? Yeah.
Good, yeah, and Tusk.
Yeah. Yeah, she wrote songs, obviously, for Fleetwood Mac as well, you know, obviously with the help musically with Lindsey. But yeah, I'm with
I don't
you
know, is
that.
It Never Going Back Again?
Yeah, I think it was actually.
Is that the one?
I think it is, yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah, it wouldn't be You Make Loving Fun, would it? Wouldn't be that one.
No.
Yeah. Definitely not.
Depends on the day, I guess.
And to think she, if you watch, there's a great Fleetwood Mac documentary that talks about all the troubles and everything like that. Or was it just about the making of the Rumours album? Whichever it is. But the amount of cocaine that woman was snorting, it's a wonder that she ever managed to keep going.
You could probably say that about a hell of a lot of people from the 70s, couldn't you?
But even people like, there's rumoured that even people like Elton John were saying, you better slow down a little.
Bloody hell.
She put a hole clean through her nose with that.
Yeah, she did.
Wow.
Yeah.
If you've got Elton John telling you to calm down, you know you're in serious trouble. Yeah. Don't you? I mean, goodness, especially 70s Elton John. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so. Go on then, Neil. You're number six.
Now, Crystal might not know who this is, and this is my own little love. It's a guy called Fish, and he was the lead singer of a band called Marillion. And Marillion mean a lot to me in the 80s. They were my band and things, and I still love them to death. He left at the height of their success to go on his own. Some say to copy like Peter Gabriel, but think what you will. But I love his song. His ability to write lyrics is phenomenal. And how he manages to sing them, God only knows, because how he ever bloody remembers them. He's not into the lyrics that rhyme. He's into a storybook of lyrics. It means a lot to me. Like I said, I grew up with him, listening to him, and now I've managed to even speak to him personally, which is always great. So, yeah, I had to put him in there. Now, he's a lyricist more of a songwriter more than a musician of a songwriter. He admits he can tinkle on a piano to write this, you know, get what he wants, but it's all about the lyrics.
So are there particular songs I should seek out?
Right. Well, if you go with Marillion, I mean, he did four albums with them in the 80s, starting Script for a Jester's Tear, Fugazi, which was their early stuff and very hippie. Misplaced Childhood is probably their most famous one with the single Kaylee. I don't know whether that was a hit over in America. And then to Clutching at Straws. He writes a lot. He's from Scotland, so he writes a lot about Scottish culture, Scottish ways. I would say start at the beginning if you want a deep delve, but I apologise if you don't like it because it is very proggy.
But Misplaced Childhood would probably be the most sort of accessible, wouldn't it? The most sort of commercial.
Okay. That's when he was in the band. So it's in the band Marillion, so...
Yeah, Kaylee is a great song. Lavender, is it Lavender? Just Lavender?
Yeah, which is a children's nursery rhyme that they turned into a song.
But Kaylee is a great 80s
biggest
classic.
Hit. I mean, it would have been number one if it hadn't been for Ferry Across the Mersey.
That's true.
That time. Yeah.
Absolutely true, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, there you go. Crystal, you've got homework.
A bit of homework.
Yes, I mean, I do.
I think, you know, like Pav said, I think Kaylee and that is just, I think it'd be fine. You know, that is literally an ode to his old girlfriend called Kaylee. It's first love. And there's the song. And it's a lovely, I mean, the lyrics are beautiful, I think.
It is a great song.
Yeah.
Great song.
Pav does a great version of it.
I sang it. I did a Facebook Live last week and sang it for your mum. Because she asked for it. So
bless
but I'll tell you,
it's
a tough one to sing.
I could imagine.
It's a tough one to sing because, like you say, there are a lot of lyrics forced into a very small little gap. So you've got to get it right. Otherwise, you just like trip over your tongue all the time. But okay, my number six is another duo. And we just mentioned him, actually. It's Elton John and Bernie Taupin.
Honourable mentions for me.
Honourable mentions.
Number three.
I think with... I will put this on the video playlist. There's some fantastic footage of the 70s where... they're doing a documentary about Elton John and they're talking about the way that they write their songs. They do it in separate rooms. Bernie Taupin will send him some lyrics and he just casually just goes, like, I've got this one here, and takes it off the top of his piano. And he said, this is one called Tiny Dancer, he said. So I just start playing some chords and he said, Blue Jean Baby. And he's just like tinkering on it and just sort of working it out. And it's a song that's like as legendary as Tiny Dancer. And you see it just at the start when he's just working out how to play it. And the fact that there was an album out a few years ago called Two Rooms, where a lot of famous people covered Elton John and Bernie Taupin songs.
Right.
And there was some fantastic, I've never been able to find it anywhere. It's not on any streaming service. It's not on like Apple Music or anything. But it makes you realise that for them, not working together, as in the same room, but working apart, worked for them. And again, I've spoken about Elton John songs on like 70s albums and 70s and loads of other episodes that we've done. As a hit ratio, I think, as in singles especially, there isn't many people as good as Elton John and Bernie Taupin when it comes to writing classic 70s.
I mean, it showed that they needed to be together.
Yeah.
Because when he went alone, or whatever that awful dance thing that he did, do you remember in the 80s when he was on his own?
It was dreadful, wasn't it?
Yeah, he did a couple of albums that weren't particularly good, did he? But
no, but yeah.
But no. So, Crystal, number three for you.
Number three for me is Carole King.
No. Elton John was number three for you. Sorry.
I'm on number five.
Oh, yeah. No, just asking you in regards to Elton John. Sorry.
Oh, God. I am like...
it's all right.
It's my turn. Oh, Lordy.
Yeah, no, I was asking you about Elton John.
Sorry. Elton John. Like you said, so many songs. I happen to have a soft spot in my heart for The Bitch Is Back.
Yeah, great tune.
Yeah.
It's one of those, just that's it. Deal with me.
Yeah.
Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. I mean, then you've got, you know, the massive hit Candle in the Wind.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I really like about him is there's not an Elton John sound. Like, you look at like a Sarah McLachlan or a Stevie Nicks, and you know that's one of their songs. Elton John's songs sound different from each other.
Yeah,
yeah,
and I love that.
Yeah, considering that he plays and obviously writes his stuff on the piano, things like Saturday Night's All Right for Fighting and The Bitch Is Back are great rock songs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that are like mainly guitar based. And he's great. Kiss the Bride is another great one from the 80s that he did, which is another great sort of really good rock sort of song rather than just a piano based song. But no, that's good points there. And also, we know what your number five is now, I think.
Yeah, sorry.
That's
why. Ahead, I'm really good at like just trying to stay on task.
Okay. So actually, Crystal, what is your number five?
My number five, big surprise, is Carole King.
Okay.
Lord, I'm so sorry for screwing up the pie.
No, that's fine. That was my fault.
It was mine.
Okay. So why Carole King?
She was one of those forerunners in like women's empowerment, personal growth kind of thing. You look at Tapestry, you make me feel like a natural woman. I feel the earth move. You've got a friend. So far away, walk on by. And of course, she sings the theme song to my very favorite show of all time, which is Gilmore Girls, and the song is Where You Lead. So I love the idea of this woman who's coming into her own and speaking her mind, but with a soft voice.
Right. See, now I didn't realize, I've only ever known Carole King and Tapestry. I didn't realize she wrote all those other songs.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that at all. So it's, and I think that's it with a lot of these people that are mainly songwriters that you don't realize a lot of. Like, I was looking, Smokey Robinson was nearly in my top 10 because I looked at the songs that he's actually written and I thought, oh my God, he wrote My Girl. Mm-hmm. And he wrote, you know, you think, Jesus, you know, and these are all these classic songs. So I didn't realize that with Carole King. I didn't realize she wrote Walk On By and things like that.
Prior to Tapestry and becoming a performer, she wrote in, I don't know if you're familiar with this, the Brill Building, which was basically a songwriting factory in the 60s.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So she and Jerry Goffin, who was her husband, they wrote a lot of hits for like Leslie Gore and I forget who else. But yeah, she wrote a lot of hits for other people in the 60s. Mm.
Wow.
Have you seen her musical, Crystal? Well, the musical of her songs.
I have not. I would like to. It's one that I have not seen, but I've heard it's fantastic.
Yeah, I've been told it's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I've not seen it. So, and she did British Summertime in the UK only like 3 or 4 years ago, just before COVID. She did High Times.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw clips of that on it must be on YouTube, but yeah, I'll put some clips of that on the video if it's on there. Yeah. Okay then, Neil, you're number five.
So we've already talked about him, Prince. He is my number five. I mean, there's a guy that can turn his hand to any song, wrote for other people, a lot of other people, as well. I think he was just a natural born songwriter. He's a natural born musician as well, isn't he? You know, apparently could play 12 instruments, you know, to the top standard. I can't even name 12 instruments. That's the thing. But we spoke about him so much on a lot of the other podcasts. I think the guy was a genius. And I think, you know, he was gone very much too soon.
Yeah.
He had so much more to give.
I mean, he was somebody that lived in, as Kevin Smith very rightly said, in Prince's world, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in his own world. But
yeah, and it was said that, like, Paisley Park, every single room in the house had the facility to record.
Did it?
So wherever he was, if he needed to, he could press record and start playing and writing stuff wherever he was in the house or in the compound complex or whatever it is, but... I don't know if they still do it, but you could go and have tours around Paisley Park, couldn't you?
I wouldn't mind doing that. It'd be interesting.
Once he passed away.
Mm.
So that would be amazing.
It would be interesting to go and see it all, wouldn't it? But you think, I mean, it was quite a long career, but in the scheme of things, he had so much more to give.
Think
how many bloody songs that guy wrote.
Oh, my God, yeah. They said that there's in the Prince vault, there is enough... I think enough material to release an album a year for like the next 30 years.
It's crazy, isn't it?
It's just crazy. Yeah. Mm. But so prolific.
Yeah. And so good as well.
So good.
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. My number five was Benny Anderson and Bjorn Jevelius, whatever his name is. Hello, family.
Hello.
Big Summer Blowout. Number four, Crystal, you said was Paul Simon.
Paul Simon, yes.
Yep. So, Neil, what's your number four?
So, it's our David Bowie.
Our David Bowie.
I think it's another artist that changed the face of popular music. You know, we had the Beatles, we've spoken about the Beatles, we've spoken about the Stones and people like that from the 60s, but I think Bowie did it as well. You know, he made things a bit more acceptable. You know, it was acceptable to be a little bit different, I think, mm-hmm. Bowie brought to the table. But not only that, he brought great, great music from the very start, timeless music. Excuse me, I did sort of fall out with him a little bit in some of the 80s stuff. I didn't go too much on it. But then he sort of rediscovered it. And his last album with Lazarus and everything on there, I've fallen in love with now again. Sort of, I didn't listen to it. I felt a bit sort of morbid to listen to that last album, but now I'm completely in love with it. Lyrics are superb. The music's superb. And we forget he was a talented musician. You know, yeah. People talk about his songwriting and lyrics, but let's not forget he was a good, you know, good musician himself. And yeah, I'm just glad he's still played a lot. You know, there's this awful worry at one time when they all passed in that dreaded 2016 where everybody went, that I thought he might get a little bit forgotten, but thankfully not. And I think he needs a lot of credit of what he changed in the musical scene.
He wasn't one of those artists that sort of changed with the times. He was one of the artists that made the times change.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Well put, Pav. Yeah.
He was absolutely. always on the curve. Mm. Rather than being the one that was following the curve. And I think that was one of the things about him was like, that was unique.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I used to be scared of him a little bit when I was younger. We had the Hunky Dory album, which is probably still my favorite. And then my brother or somebody had the Man Who Fell to Earth, a poster of him as the alien. It always creeped me out. Yeah. And I still think of it when I see him.
I think Ziggy Stardust used to freak me out.
Yeah,
I think, but it was that thing. That's what he wanted, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
To not look like a normal person, to challenge.
Yeah,
sort of like, well, here I am. What do you think of me? What am I?
He was like the original non-binary, wasn't he? The original.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, it was just the norm for him. So
and there was always little bits of controversy with him, wasn't it? Like China Girl video, I can always remember.
Yeah,
where he got banned because there was just a little bit of rumpy pumpy in there somewhere.
Yeah. When we all wanted to watch it, didn't we?
And we all stayed up late to watch it because they'd have the uncut video. Yeah. Oh, I remember those days as well. Yeah.
A rumpy pumpy.
For me, seeing him in Labyrinth in the 80s.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who else could have played the Goblin King?
I know.
He was amazing.
Who else could fill that codpiece like he did?
Right? Yeah. I still wonder if that was all Bowie.
I don't, yeah. We'll never know.
Wow. We'll ask, what was her name? Who was it? Iman?
Jennifer Connelly.
Iman was his wife.
Well, she never had any complaints.
So. I'm sure she didn't. Oh, dear. Okay, my number four is The Boss, Bruce Springsteen. Now, I've fallen in love with Bruce Springsteen over the last, I don't know, 20-odd years, more every day. And I think every time you see clips of him live or you see the YouTube videos of his 3.5-hour shows where I don't know, he's got to be in his 60s now, in his late 60s, I would have thought.
Early 70s, yeah.
Early 70s?
He was on the Zoe Ball breakfast show, which is a huge breakfast show in this country, and he was on Monday morning, live on the radio, because he's got a new album.
Yeah, it's for the soul covers, isn't it?
It is, and they're really good.
He does a version of Night Shift, the old Commodores song, which is really good.
And so he was there talking, and he said, I'm in my 70s now, but I still don't go to bed at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Really? I mean, he's the ultimate rocker, I feel.
Yeah.
There was a great, as much as I'm not a big fan of Jimmy Fallon, there was a great bit of video of footage of him talking about the lyrics from, oh God, what was the song? Screen Door Slams, Thunder Road. And he was saying about, because Jimmy Fallon asked him on that lyric, screen door slams, Mary's dress. Now he said, is it sways or is it waves? And Springsteen was saying, he said, he had the album. He had the Born to Run. Is it Born to Run album? I think it was a Born to Run album. And he said during those days, he said, I was so meticulous. I was like, it's perfection. I made sure that everything was perfect about my albums and about my records. He said, and if you open it up and you read it, he said, now I've, for the last 40 years, have sung the song Mary's Dress Sways. And he said, and he read the lyrics, and the lyrics on in the album says Mary's dress waves. So he said the album is wrong. He says, but as an artist, he just seems to have that knack of being able to put into words stuff that a normal person would feel, but in a way that makes you feel like either you're something special, or that you are a lost soul finding something or looking for something. I don't think there's anybody like him. I really don't. And yeah, sometimes there are songs you can tell, you know, there's a song that you think that's a Springsteen song, but there are moments in songs that you think that is there. There's a couple of songs of his, one that he had from an album, that Western Star, a couple of years ago, called Hitchhiking. And there's a couple of little lines in there that you think that is just Springsteen, just to a T, you know, in a couple of chords and a couple of words. It's fantastic. So yeah, so not in either of your top tens.
Honorable mentions.
Wow.
Yeah, honorable. I put him as an honorable mention.
That's fair enough. Okay, so Crystal, Elton John, and Bernie Taupin was your number three.
Yep.
So Neil, your number three.
So if I say this name, Mark Oliver Everett, does anybody know who that is? No. He's known as E, and he's from the band Eels. do you know the band, Crystal?
No, I haven't heard of them.
Ah, LA band. Another band that I've been with from the journey from the start. Of course, I was in my 20s. They released their album in the mid-90s. Loved it and have subsequently followed him since. And again, he writes to what I feel to me, if that makes sense. So a lot of his songs resonate hugely with me and what's going on and what's being done and things like that. So yeah, I just had to put him there because of the way I followed his career, been to see him live and everything. Again, I know they're not for everyone, and they do very much, he does very much, it's either full out, I'm not going to say rocky, let's say a full out funky tune, or he does a very good ballad. I don't know, I admire his songwriting immensely.
That's from the Eels, yeah?
Eels, yeah.
Right.
Not to get confused with the Mighty Boosh's Eels.
Okay.
There you are.
Fair enough. Oh, he's one of your favourites. You've mentioned him and that band numerous times.
Yeah, and well, you know how many times I've been to see them. Indeed. I even took my son to see them as his very first gig.
There you go.
Wow.
And he's been thanking you ever since, hasn't he?
Oh, he loved it. Yeah, well, it's given him the bug. So
indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Okay. My number three... If you're going to have songs and songwriters, anybody that has listened to all of our music podcasts will know I have to have this man in because I love him. And it's Lin-Manuel Miranda. It doesn't matter any angle that I can get Lin-Manuel Miranda in there. If you want to talk about great songs, but songs that are complicated, that how the hell did he write these songs and put these songs together? Even if you just talk about Hamilton, and you look at those and you think, how did he do that? How did him as a man, as flesh and blood and bones and muscles and sinews and brains and just able to come up with things like that? And then also go on to everything else that he's done, whether it's written for Moana or Encanto. I'm in his groove. As I've said before, anything that guy does, I am just there for, and it's just crazy. It was crazy that it took me like a year and a half to watch Encanto. It was crazy that I didn't really think, it was because of lockdown that I watched Hamilton the first time. And now I just am in love with everything that man does. So I don't know what anybody else feels about him, but
I'm right there with you. I was fortunate enough to see Hamilton on Broadway. I did not see original cast.
Right.
So I did not see Lin there, but I am right there with you. I'm in love with everything he does.
Mm. He's a great songwriter. And the fact that he, was it last year with Encanto, he managed to get a hit with the song, which has been a long time coming from a Disney film, you know, that it was at number one for however long.
Yeah, we don't talk about Bruno. Yeah,
that's it. It was huge.
And it was really strange because obviously with the fact that we've got like little grandkids that like just devour Disney films and you have to put them on just to keep them quiet.
Yeah.
So I'd put Encanto on for like my granddaughter and just think, right, I'll leave her to it. And, you know, and it didn't even occur to me that it was Lin-Manuel Miranda until I saw a documentary, like a little making of. I thought, I didn't realize he was involved in that. So I sat down the next time with my granddaughter and I was bawling my eyes out because it was so beautiful. But some of the songs are just like great, energetic, you know, songs. But you know, I can't remember the name of the song now, but the couple of sad ones that are in it. And I was just in pieces, and he's got that knack with me. You know, it's Quiet Uptown, which is the one from Hamilton. That when we went and saw it in London, that must have been a couple of years ago now. Luckily, everybody was wearing masks because it was still COVID times. So nobody could see me blubbering and crying like just a little wuss when it's Quiet Uptown. It's a beautiful song, but it is heartbreaking. I won't spoil it for anybody. Have you seen Hamilton yet, Neil?
Hands up, apologies.
Neil, come on, you've got to do it. If not, I'm gonna come around your place and sit there with you and make you watch it.
part of me wants, because you know I do like to go to the theatre a lot.
Yeah.
So part of me wants to go and see it rather than watch it on the telly. So I've put it on the list for next year to go to the theatre.
But I would say watch it on the TV first because it is the OG cast. Yeah.
And but then if it's that good and then the live version, I know it should be.
The live version was fantastic, but they're just not as good as the OG cast. They're just not. Right. And well, that's no disrespect to the guys and gals that are doing it. It is they are fantastic, but you got to watch it with the original crowd. But yeah, so number three for me, Lin-Manuel Miranda. Crystal, you're number two, please.
Number two is Brian Wilson of the Beach Boys.
Honorable mention for me.
Yeah, growing up in Southern California, they were part of the soundtrack of my life. And, you know, Darlin' is a beautiful song. And then you get into the whole, you know, Wouldn't It Be Nice and In My Room and Surfer Girl and
Good Vibrations.
Good Vibrations. It just evokes such, at least for me, such specific memories. And I think even, you know, for those who are, you know, didn't grow up near the beach like I did, it paints a picture of a time and place and an idyllic setting and an idyllic way of growing up. And I think he's absolutely brilliant. I mean, you go back to, we've talked a little bit about, you know, sometimes the lyrics or the melodies are so simple, but I compare it to cooking because one of the tests of a good chef is, can they make eggs? Can they make a good egg? It's a very simple thing, but it's hard to do. Same thing here. It seems so simple, but it's not easy to do. And he's a wackadoodle genius.
He indeed. Perfectionist as well, wouldn't he?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a great one.
Are you a Beach Boys fan, Neil? I am. They're the ones. They're the sort of band that I will listen to and then forget about for a while to listen to. Does that make sense? You know, they're not on a continuous thing on my playlist, and I don't know why. It's probably because I keep forgetting about it.
Yeah, but I think that's me, not them. You can take for granted, can't you?
Yeah, you really do.
It's the Beach Boys. It's like surfer music. But then when you dig down, you know,
Little
Saint Nick was always one of my favourite Christmas ones as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was on one of the like compilation Christmas albums I had when I was like a kid.
I mean, I grew up with Pet Sounds.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of the vinyl that was in the cupboard that would get played. So I don't know why. I've got to rectify this now.
Indeed. Indeed, you have.
But no, I do listen to them, yeah, on occasion.
Okay, then go on, then, Neil, you're number two.
Well, this is the chap that I thought you would have thought I had at number one, is Eddie Vedder.
Oh, right.
Pearl Jam. Now, he's moved higher up because I'm still buzzing from seeing them in the summer on the tour. And like I said before, I got treated to go into the Gold Circle for my birthday, and I've just... still in love.
Had to do that. Sorry.
But obviously he writes the lyrics for Pearl Jam. They work as a unit to write the whole song. But he's got his solo stuff. And I think speaks volumes to how it feels sometimes is song Society, whether you know that. It's from the movie Into the Wild. I think it's just a beautiful song. I find it fascinating that, and people say, oh, I don't understand what he's saying, and I get that, but read the lyrics and then find out that he is singing just poetry sometimes. And his new album, I've fallen in love with, and now they've released a deluxe part of it. I just can't stop listening to it at the moment. It's taken over my airwaves. So, yeah, I'm going to give him right up there at number two because, yeah, he's...
I respect that.
Yeah, I just...
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't get Pearl Jam.
Well, have you listened to his solo stuff?
I've not listened to his solo stuff, but part of it, I did do like I did with Radiohead. Mm. I had an afternoon of listening to Pearl Jam, and I can't. I mean, look, I don't want to disrespect you, Neil, as well, because I know how much you love them.
Mm.
But like, I think I said to you, didn't I? There was one song, I can't remember what it was, that actually made me laugh.
No, we didn't. What, and I can't remember understand what he was saying.
Well, no, because there was just it just seemed to me like it was a comedy song, and I said to you about it, and I can't remember what it was now.
Yeah, I can't remember.
And you actually said, I don't know. I'll have to try and find it because
yeah,
it was,
I can't remember what song.
Yeah, I can't remember. I'll have to try and find out what song it was. But I didn't want to disrespect you because I know how much you love them.
Yeah, I do. Always have also, since 91.
Yeah, it's also 10. Like it is when you said that you can't understand what he's saying. So we're here, we're here in
a
heart.
I mean, the famous one is the song Yellow Ledbetter. I would always. Honestly, say listen to it and think what he's singing because even I don't know the lyrics to that one.
What's it called?
Yellow Ledbetter. It's an absolutely beautiful song, and it wasn't even an album track.
Okay, I'll put that on the video playlist.
But you need to watch it with lyrics because even I can't do that one. It's like, whoa. Okay. But I think he's a genius songwriter. And he is, you know, his solo stuff. And he's such an accomplished musician that people don't give him the credit for. He really is. I mean, when you sit and watch him finger pluck the guitar like he does, it's just, oh, I find it phenomenal.
No, fair play.
And he did a whole album on the ukulele as well.
Did he? Well, there you go. He's gone right up in my estimations. And if he's a uki, uki player, then goodness me.
Maybe he's done a great song. They put it on the deluxe bit of the Earthling album with Cat Stevens. He's playing the ukulele. Cat Stevens is singing, and then I think his daughter does the backing vocals for.
Oh, right.
And it's absolutely, I think it's a lovely little ditty. It's literally about 2 minutes long, and I think it's great.
Oh, I'll have to look out for that then. Maybe that's the gateway I need in to Eddie Vedder.
Yeah, well, maybe
then,
it's the solo stuff. Album. Like, my son prefers his solo stuff because he finds it a bit calmer. Whereas, like, the Pearl Jam, you could get bashed out by the heavy as well as having the more mellow stuff, whereas his solo stuff is a lot more mellow.
Okay. Let's give that a go, okay. My number two is someone that I think it was 1983. The BBC had a live, he was playing at Wembley Arena live, and they did like in two parts for some reason, I don't know why, but it's Billy Joel. And it was it was during the Innocent Man tour. And for some reason, they had the first half of the gig live, and then they did the second part of it. I think they showed it the following night at like 10:30 or something stupid. I don't know what it was. But I fell in love with all the songs then, and I'd bought the Innocent Man album, and then I went back right to the start, Cold Spring Harbor, where he sounds like Chip and Dale, because they apparently got the mixing or mastering of the album wrong, so it is at the wrong speed, so his voice is a little bit higher, but there's some beautiful songs in there. There's and then I bought every single album and carried on until like his last proper album, which I think was, I think Stormfront was his last proper album, because he sort of stopped doing.
When would that have been?
Pop, so that would have been
in the early 90s.
Early 90s, yeah. So like River of Dreams and all of that kind of stuff, and then that was the last album that he sort of did properly. I mean, he's doing, I think, doesn't he do monthly shows at Madison Square Garden? I think
he's still there. Plays, yeah,
he plays a lot there, and he does periodically. He has a station on Sirius XM.
Oh, does he?
Right.
He does shows for, yeah.
Right. I've seen him, I think, three, four times live.
Would you go again?
Oh, I would go again. Yeah, he's, I mean, he did play
Summertime next year.
Did he? But yeah.
No, next year he's in London next year.
Is he in London
doing
next year?
The big Hyde Park. Yeah,
really. Mm. I mean, he's fantastic live, and he's another one a bit like Elton John in regards that he's done some kick-ass rock songs, considering he is a piano player.
I was thinking that the most unlikely rock star as well, doesn't he?
Without a doubt. And then the fact that he got to marry Christie Brinkley. I mean, goodness me. I mean, if, you know, it's like you ask Christie Brinkley, you know, what do I find attractive about multi-millionaire Billy Joel? That's, what, that's the kind of thing, isn't it? But I think I think my favourite album of his is Nylon Curtain, which is very Beatles, Beatles influenced. But there are great songs. I'm trying to think. Street Life Serenade is the name of the album. There's a song on there called The Great Suburban Showdown, which is all about somebody that is going back home and he doesn't want to go back home. You know, he's got his life. And it is a fantastic song. It is just so melancholy and just like heart-wrenching, because he knows, you know, he's going back. He's going home to say goodbye, basically, which is one of the lines in the song. But yeah, I don't think there's a bad album from Billy Joel. So for me, that's my number two.
Great choice.
Right then, before we get on to our number ones, let's do a countdown from number 10 to number two, Crystal. Then Neil will do the same. Then I'll do the same. Fire away.
Okay, number 10 is Dolly Parton. Number 9 is Martin Gore from Depeche Mode. Number 8, Stephen Page and Ed Robertson from Bare Naked Ladies. 7 is Sarah McLachlan. 6 is Stevie Nicks. 5 is Carole King. 4 is Paul Simon. 3 is Elton John and Bernie Taupin. And Brian Wilson comes in at number 2.
Wonderful. Neil?
Fantastic.
Same with you, please. You've got to say his last name, though.
Oh, I'll just say number 10, Ben and Bjorn from ABBA. Number 9, Sam Cooke. Number 8, Peter Gabriel. Number 7, Leonard Cohen. Number 6, Fish from Marillion. Number 5, Prince. Number 4, David Bowie. Number 3, E from the Eels. Number 2, Eddie Vedder.
Well done. Why did you say it like that?
I was going to pretend to do.
Okay. Mine is number 10, John Lennon. 9, Jeff Lynne from the Electric Light Orchestra. 8, George Harrison. 7, Paul Simon. 6, Elton John and Bernie Taupin. 5, Benny Anderson and Bjorn Ulvaeus. 4, Bruce Springsteen, the Boss. 3, Lin-Manuel Miranda. And number 2, Billy Joel. So, Crystal, what is your number one songwriter of all time?
My number one is your number 2, Mr. William Joel.
Hey! Excellent. Okay.
He's one of these people who can just craft a song, and he can tell a story, man. You know, Piano Man and Scenes from an Italian Restaurant.
That's the ultimate story song, I think. That is the ultimate story song.
And then the one that touches my heart the most is the one he wrote for his daughter, Lullaby.
Yeah.
Love it. So he just runs such a gamut. And then, like you were talking about, you know, with Innocent Man, I love the doo-wop feel to it, and, you know, For the Longest Time.
Yeah.
And he's done so many different styles and done them well. And like you, I mean, I've seen him in concert several times, and I could see him 15 shows in a row and he wouldn't have the same set list.
No, that's right.
He's got that many.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's not many artists that can do that, is there?
No.
At all.
No. And it would still be songs that were hits, and it'll still be songs that people know. One thing that surprised me, because my favorite Billy Joel song of all time is from the Stranger album, is called Vienna. And it wasn't a hit. It wasn't a hit song. And I played it one time and my daughter went, "Oh, I love that song." I said, "Well, do you know that song?" And it was in Princess Diaries or some Disney like kids film. And I thought, "Oh, well, that's so cool that like my daughter knows that song." Because for some, there is something about that song out of all, I mean, I love nearly every Billy Joel. There isn't many Billy Joel songs that I could think, "Oh, I could do without that one." But that is my favorite. I'm so chuffed that that's your number one. That is so cool. That is so cool. Ah. So, Neil, is Billy Joel your number one?
No, I'm afraid okay. not. I'm sorry.
Did I ruin the surprise at the very start of the podcast?
What, who my number one is?
Yeah.
No, it's Timmy Mallett.
Timmy Mallett. Crystal's not going to know who Timmy Mallett is.
No, of course not. He was a children's entertainer in the UK. He was shit.
Yeah.
Crystal, let's be honest, he was shit. Now, originally I wrote Lennon and McCartney because the way they... you know, had put them on the my number one. They'd labelled themselves for all their songs and the way they work together. So I will say John Lennon because I've got most of his solo stuff over Paul McCartney's. But I find their Beatles stuff fascinating still now to this day that they managed to do what they did together and the songs they wrote. We've talked about all these other artists, mind-boggling, but... for what little they had to what they produced and then what they became.
So we can all talk about it, Paul McCartney is my number one.
Is it? Okay.
So Paul McCartney and John Lennon.
Lennon and McCartney.
Yeah, so Lennon and McCartney. But yeah, carry on, Neil.
Yeah, I just find it fascinating that the two of them, you know, what they achieved, what they did in such a short space of time as well, and the way they changed. I don't think we're ever going to see the likes of that again at all. I don't think we can. And, you know, and the fact that everybody, I've never really met somebody that hates the Beatles. Now, I've met people that don't like all of the Beatles, but will like a Beatles song. It's sort of like a phenomenon, isn't it, in itself, that there is that. But I also find John Lennon's solo stuff great. You know, I perked up and said about Working Class Hero. I love that song and I still think it's relevant today. Even more probably so. So yeah, let's put John Lennon and McCartney at number one for me.
So you're going to go Lennon and McCartney?
I'm going to put it like that, yeah, okay. Because it is, that's what I initially put, and I find it almost mind-blowing what they achieved in such a short space of time. And I also will say about John Lennon, he's another character, you know, I wish I'd seen what he'd done. I wish we all had that experience of seeing what he'd done after.
Yeah.
You know, from now on, whether he'd still be doing the magic that he did or whether, you know, that was all he had. And I don't know. It just blows my mind.
Well, the thing I'd say with McCartney as well is that he went through the Beatles stuff and came up with some of the most iconic songs of all time, the most successful songs of all time, the most popular songs of all time. Then went from that to Wings, where he then wrote some of the most successful and most popular songs of all time. Then went solo and did some amazing songs solo. I mean, look, has his voice gone now? Should he sort of give up? Maybe he should. But I watched him at Glastonbury.
I wasn't
at Glastonbury.
No.
And it hit me then that the man is just a goddamn legend.
He is a legend.
You know, and I think people take advantage of him and people will laugh at him. And the little clip I did on was Meat Free Monday, which anybody that has listened to Kevin and Bean and that one know that that is like not one of McCartney's highlights, you know. And you listen to some of his like new stuff and it's not a patch obviously on, you know, he's probably used every chord in every way that he can over, what would it be, 60 years?
60 it's crazy.
It's absolutely crazy.
There was one song he had recently that I thought was very good. It was just before lockdown, that last album he had, was it Come Over Me or whatever it is.
Was it? Are you sure something you're like, no, about it was Paul McCartney in the, I mean, came,
yeah, yeah, not in a. Not
I,
in
yeah,
a
I think
nudge,
I know the
nudge,
one you
wink,
mean.
Wink.
Yeah, it was quite a simple sort of song. Wasn't
yeah,
it?
But it was a typical McCartney song. Yeah. But it was so catchy. We talked about Earworms before, and that had it straight there, and he's a master of it. But the two of them together, I mean,
yeah, yeah. Cool. I saw him live in 1994, I think it was. What was the album that the My Brave Face?
Was that 1994? Was it?
Yeah, Flowers in the Dirt was the album that came out.
Right.
And we went to Wembley, and he had a great band.
Wembley Stadium, was it?
Wembley Arena.
Oh, right, okay.
And before he came on stage, there were like screens, and it was flashing up images of the Beatles and Wings. Mm. And it hit me then, and I genuinely started crying because I thought, I'm going to see a Beatle. Mm. I'm going to see a Beatle. And he was amazing. It was like 2.5 hours, Springsteen-esque. Every song, like even the songs from the album that he was, you know, The Flowers in the Dirt were all hit songs. So, you know, song after song, Fall on the Hill, you know, Live and Let Die, Long and Winding Road, Hey Jude. And it was just like, it was, I think it's the greatest live show I've ever seen, without a shadow of a doubt. And that just shows you, I think, like you say, you take for granted who he is now.
And he's 80 now.
And he's,
of course.
Yeah. And the fact that he's doing that,
I had friends that were there at the Glastonbury, and they stayed and watched him. He was near on 3 hours, wasn't he?
Yeah. Yeah,
at 80. Well, he's
like
80
say,
the day after.
His voice is gone, you know, and he's.
But
he didn't
need the voice. The crowd carried it nearly, yeah, and exactly. Then he had obviously the backing singers, and he's got surrounded himself with the world's best musicians. So
exactly. So, Crystal, which one are you a bigger fan of, Lennon or McCartney? Was that an improv?
Probably
an
McCartney. Yeah, it's like which child?
Yeah,
I would give the edge to McCartney.
Okay.
I feel like Lennon can be a little more self-indulgent.
Yeah.
But not to take away from either one of them. And the main reason they weren't on my list is because I didn't have as personal a connection to their music as I had to, you know, the other things I had on my list. Mm. But I mean, it's hard to argue that, you know, together or separate, they're not the greatest.
Yeah.
I mean, McCartney wasn't as political, I suppose, as John Lennon. That was the thing, isn't it? And that is whether you...
I don't know. Give Ireland Back to the Irish was a...
Well,
was a
yeah,
pretty,
but I mean, John Lennon was doing it from a very young time, wasn't he? I mean, he's more known as being your sort of outspoken...
And you can't get more political than... I mean, can you?
I thought you were going to play the frog chorus.
No. I mean, you know.
That's the most political song.
I'm getting worried that this podcast episode is going to get taken off the air because I'm playing... I mean, you can't get any more political than that, Neil. Come on.
Wow.
I'll put that video on the video playlist. Okay, so that everyone can see what we're talking about. Honourable mentions. We've only got a few here. So at And Why Not Pod said, I mean, it has to be Springsteen. Fantastic storytelling through great songs. At This One Samantha said, Amy Winehouse, Straight from the Heart. At FTLOL Podcast said, like a good Disney song, especially Lion King and Aladdin, so Tim Rice. So Lion King was Tim Rice and was Elton John.
Elton John. Yeah.
Nikki Dennis said Cat Stevens, Leonard Cohen, Carol King. How can I forget Neil Diamond, who of course wrote amazing songs for other people. Glenn Campbell and my favourite, George Harrison. And at The God of Pod gave me his own 10. It was number 10, Shania Twain. Number 9, Ray Davis of the Kinks. 8, Kurt Cobain. 7, Paul Simon. 6, Ian Brown. 5, Axl Rose. 4, Kelly Jones from the Stereophonics. 3, Noel Gallagher. 2, John Lennon. And 1, Paul McCartney. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Crystal, we've done it again. Yay! We've done it. So before we say our thank yous and our goodbyes, Neil, do you want to tell everybody how they can get in touch with us? Are
of
you ready?
Of course I
Steady?
Would.
Go.
Email us at top10pods@hotmail.com. Tom, you can ask us any questions you like or give us some any ideas for the top tens you'd like to hear. You can find us on all the social media sites at Top 10 Pods. Do give us a click, give us a like, whatever you do on those. Come and help support the podcast at patreon.com. Guess what? /top 10 pods, where you can get all sorts of rewards, where even being a guest yourself on the pod is up for grabs. Check out all of our links via the link tree. You can find the link in the show notes. And please do come and subscribe. Leave us a review and rating wherever you get those podcasts from.
Goodness me, that's going to be like flashcards on the YouTube channel. That is, this is going to be, but that was wonderfully done, Neil.
Yeah, but I don't want to keep repeating it slowly because people are going to go, oh.
Well, no, because you've got to remember that like every episode could be somebody's first episode.
Well, yes.
Yeah. That's what you got.
Well, they'll have to rewind and listen again, then, won't they?
Indeed. And the other thing you've got to remember is. Just remember that.
I've completely forgotten that.
Dear. Anyway, Crystal, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, it was such a fun time. I appreciate the invitation. Love it.
Well, you'll come and join us again in the new year, yeah?
Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for your support, as always. It really means the world to us. And look out for something a little special in your letterbox. That sounds very dirty.
I didn't mean it to sound...
I should give that one a little ding, really. I didn't mean that to sound so bad. I'm sorry, Crystal.
You know what? I'll take a surprise in my box.
Oh, wonderfully done. Thank you once again, Crystal. Thank you, Neil.
Thank you, Pav. Thank you, Crystal. It's been wonderful as always.
Indeed. Thank you very much, everybody, for watching and listening. And let's go start the countdown.
Meet free one day.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.